Exposure to pollution and the impacts of climate change hurts everyone. But Black, Brown, and low-income Americans bear disproportionate burdens linked to discrimination. In the industrial part of Louisiana, known as Cancer Alley, the majority Black residents face a cancer risk that is up to 47 times higher than the EPA's acceptable limit, according to ProPublica. Environmental justice communities have been pushing back against pollution for decades, and sometimes justice does prevail. The environmental lawyers of Earth Justice recently helped Cancer Alley advocates fight the construction of a new Mitsubishi Chemical Group plant. It would have released hundreds of tons of dangerous air pollutants per year, including nitrogen oxides and formaldehyde. After the community opposition caused costly delays, Mitsubishi decided to cancel the project. But each fight for environmental justice takes a massive amount of effort on behalf of locals and advocates standing up to powerful industry. Well, now those fights may get even harder, as the early moves of the Trump White House signal that this administration would rather not acknowledge the pollution burdens placed on EJ communities. Joining us now is Patrice Sims, a visiting professor at Harvard Law School and the Vice President of Litigation for Healthy Communities at Earth Justice. Welcome back to Living on Earth.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So before we get into President Trump's recent actions regarding environmental justice, could you please talk us through the history of White House policy on EJ? What was the situation that President Trump inherited?
You know, the federal government really started paying attention to environmental justice going all the way back to the early 90s. We saw a couple of things happen during the Clinton administration, starting in about 1992, with the creation of what later became the Office of Environmental Justice at EPA, and the signing of an executive order in 1994 by President Clinton. That was the first executive order directly addressing environmental justice. And we've seen a focus on environmental justice with varying degrees of seriousness and stringency over the years. But one of the things that has been true through Democratic and Republican administrations since 1994 is that this Clinton era environmental justice executive order has survived and has served a bit as an anchor to the federal government's approach to thinking about environmental justice.
We just, of course, wrapped up with the Biden administration, which actually put environmental justice kind of at the center.
But that will have some concrete and important impacts on real people. One of the signals that's being sent around environmental justice is don't focus on, don't listen to, don't pay attention to communities on the front lines of pollution. Among the many things that environmental justice programs and strategies tried to do is make sure that voices and input from communities that are often on the very front lines of pollution and toxic exposure were sought out in the context of making important policy decisions or adopting and crafting regulatory programs that have to happen anyway, right? Under statutes like the Clean Air Act that already require the regulation of air pollution. And that's among the things that environmental justice programming within federal agencies did. And if that stops, it means those voices, the participation of those communities in the decision-making processes could disappear. It also could affect how enforcement happens. If you think about where EPA and other agencies that enforce the laws associated with pollution and exposure, how they're thinking about what they're trying to achieve with those enforcement strategies, that enforcement might say, hey, let's focus at least some of our energies on making sure that we're addressing those polluters that are violating the law in ways that are exposing these communities that are already overburdened and already on the front lines of pollution. And if the instruction to agencies is stop doing that, then that pollution may continue and those communities may continue to suffer. So there's a host of reasons why this really matters. And it isn't a conversation really about policy and esoteric legal principles. We're really talking about pollution that causes cancer, that kills people, that sends children to the hospital with asthma attacks, that causes lost work days, that causes lost school days. These are real consequences for real people, and often consequences for real people and real communities that are already also subject to all kinds of other burdens and marginalization.
We're talking about environmental justice issues that have to deal with communities of color being more affected by pollution than white communities. And I understand that there's actually a statute in the Civil Rights Act that addresses issues of the federal government perpetuating racism. So what exactly is Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, and how does it relate to environmental justice issues?
Yeah, well, Title VI generally instructs the federal government to eliminate discrimination with respect to funds that it distributes. And largely that means the states. Title VI was intended to prevent the federal government from outsourcing racial discrimination to the states through funding of racist practices at the state level. And it relates to environmental justice because among the things that states administer are environmental programs. And to the extent that they're administering environmental programs that receive funding from the federal government, which almost all of them do, they have an obligation to do that in ways that are non-discriminatory. That's what it means to comply with Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. And EPA and other federal agencies have an obligation to make sure that those grant recipients are operating in ways that are non-discriminatory.
So, Patrice, what options do you think environmental justice communities have for pushing back against threats to their health in these times, you know, during this second Trump administration?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. The withdrawal of executive orders and policies meant to ensure that federal agencies are really thinking about environmental justice, even with those having been withdrawn, the underlying statutes that direct what federal agencies have to be doing, statutes like the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, those statutes have substantive requirements about what has to be done, about what air pollutants have to be regulated, how they have to be regulated. And those statutes continue to provide vehicles for communities to fight for cleaner air, for cleaner water. Those substantive statutes like the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act are very powerful, but they don't always ensure non-discrimination in environmental pollution and exposures. But even if the federal government decides to abandon principles of